You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com, and the American League West suddenly looks like the landscape changes by the week. We're going to talk to all five of our correspondents on that topic. I'm joined with Alvin Gonzalez of MLB.com. Alvin, welcome. A couple of questions, and the Angels have so few of them, it's hard to find questions. But what do you think the confidence level is from Mike Socia, Jerry DePoto, et cetera, that C.J. Wilson can still pitch at a high level in the big leagues? How much faith have they lost in this guy?
Well, you know, Richard, I thought initially you were going to ask me how much confidence C.J. Wilson has in himself, and the answer to that, yes,
yeah, I know
that amount of confidence. That's never an issue with him and his abilities. But I think, I mean, this may sound a little short-sighted, but I feel like Game 3 of the Division Series was pretty telling. Number one was the fact that they rushed Matt Shoemaker back to pitch Game 2 because they didn't really have much confidence in C.J. Wilson pitching Game 2, which meant he would have pitched twice in that series. And then the fact that C.J. Wilson gets into a little bit of trouble in the first inning, he gives up that base-clearing triple to Alex Gordon, I believe it was, and they take him right out of the game and they go with a bullpen game when they're facing elimination. I think that was very telling on where they stand in their confidence with C.J. Wilson. Now, having said that, that was in the midst of his worst season ever as a starting pitcher, a season when he had his highest walk rate since 2008, and a season where he just kind of fell into some sort of downward spiral in the second half. He missed some time with an ankle injury, and, you know, sometimes C.J. gets into these phases where he wants to do so much to make adjustments to get it right, and sometimes, and we've talked about this before, he has the ability to kind of over-tinker. He's never going to be a guy who simplifies things out there. He works really, really hard. And sometimes he just gets lost within himself of just trying to continually make these adjustments. The thing I'll say with C.J. is he's always been a guy who has great stuff, but he's also always been a guy who kind of toes the line with a very high walk rate. Anytime you're a starting pitcher who's walking guys, you're going to be prone to seasons like that. But you got to have confidence in C.J. because the first 2 years that he was with the Angels, he was really good. He had a bad second half in 2012, but it was a good year. 2013, he was really good pole to pole. And the one thing that they really liked in C.J. when they initially sought him out in free agency was he's durable. He's going to come into camp in shape. He's never really had any arm injuries. You could pretty much count on him for 28 to 33 starts any given year. I think that in itself says a lot. We'll see if he can figure it out to be a top-of-the-rotation starter, which they kind of need given all the questions in their rotation this year. But the fact that he's going to be out there every fifth day and you can pretty much count on that, I think that in itself is very valuable.
Yeah, and you know, you and I know the guy well enough to know that start in the division series is going to stay with him the whole offseason. It's going to drive him. You know, I mean, if physically he's capable of doing it, again, he does overthink it at times. I wouldn't be surprised if the guy came back and had a terrific season. You know, but you got to do it. You know, I mean, and I'm sure he's at the point where there's a lot of frustration on his part. I was going to ask you about Garrett Richards. Do you think his success last year was as simple, or not as simple, but part of it was, I'm going to be out there every fifth day. I'm no more going back and forth to bullpen. I know what my routine is. Do you think how much did that contribute to his breakthrough?
You know what, Richard, and I'm glad you touched on this, because if you talk to Garrett and if you talk to Mike Butcher and even if you talk to Mike Socia about it, they'll point to that as the reason why Garrett Richards had so much success. It sounds so simplistic, but yeah, it really is true, because, you know, 2012, 2013 was really hard on a young guy like Garrett who's still trying to figure it out, because he kept getting shuttled back and forth between AAA and Major League. He kept moving back and forth from the rotation, the bullpen. And they were still trying to figure out if he was going to be that kind of lights-out back end of the bullpen reliever, or he was going to be the guy to take his turn every fifth day. Finally, down the stretch in 2013, the Angels are out of it. Joe Bland is no longer worthy of remaining in the rotation. Garrett Richards takes his place. And he gets this sort of 15-start sample size where he really starts figuring things out. And at that point, he kind of won a spot in the rotation for the following season. And just coming into camp, knowing, okay, this is my role, I'm going to be in the rotation, and just moving throughout the course of the season and building that five-day routine in the big leagues like he's never had, and knowing he's going to take his turn every fifth day, I think did wonders for his confidence, and I think it did wonders for his success overall. I think the most surprising thing about Garrett last year was that his fastball velocity jumped. He's always had, he had a huge arm coming out of Oklahoma. He's always had that fastball. But in the major leagues, he was 92, 93 for the most part when he was starting games. Last year, he was about 96, 97. He had the second highest average fastball velocity among starters. Only Yordano Ventura threw harder than him. And he said that it was because he was on that five-day routine, because now he knew when to get his lifts in, when to do his band work. And he felt like throughout the course of the entire year, his arm just got stronger. And, I mean, he showed so much last year. I mean, nobody could really touch him. Nobody could hit home runs off him. I think he had the lowest home run rate in baseball. And, you know, it was such a shame to see him go down with that knee injury. And, you know, as young as he is, it's still going to be a big question mark for him to bounce back, because there aren't many starting pitchers who have really recovered or actually really suffered an injury to their landing legs like that. And, you know, this Angels rotation, I feel like, can be on two complete ends of the spectrum. They could be really, really good, or they could be really, really bad, and that's because they have questions throughout. Jared Weaver, strikeout-to-walk ratio continues to drop. He's getting a little bit older. Fastball velocity continues to drop. C.J. Wilson, coming off a down year. Garrett Richards, coming off knee surgery. Matt Shoemaker, people aren't really sure he's going to be able to duplicate what he did last year. And then the fifth part of the rotation is Andrew Heaney, Nick Tropiano, two young guys, and Hector Santiago, a guy who just walks a lot of hitters. I mean, there's a potential for this rotation to be very good. There's also a potential for this rotation to have a lot of holes.
Yeah, and there's a potential for to come to spring training and establish some depth. You know, if Haney and Santiago and Tropiano all pitch well, it's amazing. That's the landscape of baseball right now. But going into spring training, are they settled on a Rutledge Green competition at second, or is Rutledge the starter going in place of with Howie Kendrick now gone?
I would lean toward Rutledge getting most of the playing time there. They like him. They feel like he's proven himself in the big leagues, what he's had to kind of fill in for Troy Tulowitzki at shortstop and had these sustained stretches in the big leagues. They feel like he's proven that he's capable. But there's going to be an open competition. It's going to be Rutledge, it's going to be Grant Green, it's going to be Johnny Giovatella, who doesn't have options. It's going to be Taylor Featherston, who they got in the Rule 5 draft, mainly to be the utility guy, but he's going to compete for a spot there too. And, you know, one thing that I heard after they traded Howie Kendrick was that, you know, the Angels don't really expect to have one guy accumulate 600 plate appearances at second base the way Howie did. They're trying to supplement that by trading for Matt Joyce, who gives them that lefty presence in their lineup, who maybe lengthens their lineup a little bit more, and they're just going to have a collection of guys at second base. Second base is a very deep position organizationally. They have Alex Yarbrough, Wayne in the wings, maybe even Roberto Baldassin could play it one day. But I think for this season, they're just going to try to maybe look for some platoon advantages, ride the hot bat. I don't think we're going to see one guy play second base the whole year.
The other guy, a guy we were talking about a lot a year ago, is Tyler Skaggs, young left-hander, now 23 years old, is Tommy John surgery in early August. Are the Angels saying no Tyler Skaggs in 2015, that we'll just see you in spring training in 2016? Is that
That's exactly what they're doing. The day he had the surgery, that's what they said. We'll look for Tyler Skaggs to be back in 2016. Some of us kind of rolled our eyes like, wait a minute. He had it in early August of 2014. What do you mean 2016? And, you know, it's the logical thing to do. He was 22 years old when he had the surgery. They don't even want to put trying to rush back to get back on the mound and pitch down the stretch in 2015 in his mind. 2015 for Tyler Skaggs, when I talked to him a little bit before Christmas, it's just going to be a rehab year for him. It's going to be really tough on him to be in spring training, to be around the team. He wants to be around the team the entire year and just watch these guys play and him not be able to do anything at all. You know, I wouldn't rule out him maybe throw in some bullpen sessions around maybe September, maybe even getting some innings in the instructional league or something like that, just so that he goes into the offseason with a little bit of confidence. But they're completely ruling him out for 2015, and that's why they continued to add depth in the rotation, Richard, as we've talked about on this podcast before. And look, they're going to be I know this is a little bit down the road now, but if you look ahead to 2016, they're going to have some nice young pitchers. And again, Tommy John surgery has a really good track record of recovery. They're going to have Tyler Skaggs. They're going to have Garrett Richards, Matt Shoemaker, Nick Tropiano, Andrew Heaney, Hector Santiago, in addition to Jared Weaver and T.J. Wilson, who will be going into their final contract years. That's a good collection of controllable arms, especially for a team that, you know, has had the worst-ranked farm system in baseball the last 2 years.
You know, a week ago, you had just written a story that the Angels just needed to go out and get a young, controllable third baseman, and this is why you're so good. A day later, they go out and get Kyle Kubica from the Big Texan, from the Braves. Now,
I should have played the lottery that day, Richard.
Yeah, you should have played the lottery that day. So he popped out at Double A. Everybody loves him. He's penciled in to play what, Triple A this year, and then be there if there's an injury.
Yeah, he's going to start the season Triple A, I believe. I'd be pretty surprised if he warrants a September call up. They feel like he's that close. And then the plan for him, and again, these plans tend to go haywire every once in a while. It happened with Caleb Coward and the Angels, who have not had very good success with third base prospects. But the plan for Kubica is to take over at third base after David Freese hits free agency. And that's what that signing was all about. You know, they're trying to, and as we talked about on the last podcast, they're trying to win now while also have that sustainable winning and extend their window a little bit more. And they just didn't have, just like the Baldo Queen signing was all about getting a middle infielder into their system, the trade for Kubica, where, you know, they gave up a really nice pitching prospect of Ricardo Sanchez, was all about getting that player in their system who's ready to play third base. Caleb Coward has struggled really, really bad in Double A the last 2 years. He used to be the number one prospect by far. He's not that anymore. They needed to look somewhere else, and they feel like they have the guy in Kubica. He's not one of the premier high ceiling prospects, but, you know, I think one of the directions that we've seen the Angels go, and this was especially the case in signing Roberto Baldoquin. To them, it's not so much important that you have a high ceiling. What's important to them is that you have a high floor, meaning that the chances that you're a total bust and you can't hack it in the big leagues is kind of very slim. They prefer to take those safe players because, you know, with a farm system that doesn't have much talent and a payroll that has a lot of money committed to just a handful of players, they need players who are going to come up and have the best chance possible to succeed in the big leagues.
Yeah, That's the interesting way you put it. It's not the ceiling they care about, it's the floor.
Yeah.
All right, Alvin, I appreciate it very much. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
I'm joined by the voice of the A's, Ken Korak. Ken, what an offseason. Things have finally settled down a little bit. Let me ask you this, bottom line, what's your assessment of the offseason Billy Beane has had?
Well, do you have about 2 or 3 hours, Richard?
It's
been unbelievable. I mean, we've all seen over the years in baseball when a team starts trading veteran players, maybe tries to get younger or cut payroll, that's not that uncommon. What Billy has done, I think they've made 9 trades involving 27 different players. They actually replenished the supply and to still have, I think, a pretty solid major league team. I think it's unprecedented. I've never seen anything like it before.
Yeah, you know, and when he made the last trade that basically installed Marcus Semien as a shortstop and put Tyler Clippard somewhere in the back of the bullpen, I'm thinking, like, okay, you can't pick the A's to win the West. They're probably not as good as the Mariners or Angels, but they're in the mix. Their pitching staff is deep. I mean, they're going to have platoons at first base, I guess. I mean, first of all, let's start with first base. Ike Davis will play against right-handed pitching and Mark Conhaie against lefties. How do you think that's going to work out?
That's a great question. I think one of the things, to preface the answer, Richard, going to spring training, oftentimes there's not a lot of intrigue or decisions to be made. This is one of those springs where it's all going to unfold for all of us, and we're going to learn about a lot of the new players and a lot of the plans that the A's have. I don't think there's any question that they acquired Ike Davis to play first base against right-handed pitching. And you've seen him a lot more than I have because he's been over in the National League. But the A's feel that he's a plus defender and that he can hit righties. And I think you may even see Billy Butler play first base against lefties, and then someone else might DH. And you mentioned the kid Mark Canha, who's from the University of California. I think there's a chance that he might play Ashley out in left field quite a bit for the A's this year, Richard against left-handed pitching. But again, all that story is yet to be told this year.
Yeah, and the rotation looks not just good with Gray, Kazmir, Chavez, who's one of Billy's great success stories. Drew Pomerantz really seemed to come of age last year when he got a chance to pitch. I guess I take it the A's are counting on him to be somewhere in the mix there, right?
I would think so, and he has the great pedigree. Is an outstanding college pitcher, a former number one pick, and as you know, bounced around Cleveland and Colorado. But it's a lot of it's his issues revolved around his delivery and his mechanics. And over the last couple of years, he simplified that, worked out of the stretch primarily last year, even as a starting pitcher. Still has a very good arm, so he's in the mix. And then they, you know, they really bolster their depth with their starting rotation. So there are, beside the guys you mentioned, and Jesse Chavez had a very good year, and I think would have continued in the rotation last year if the A's hadn't acquired Samardzija and Lester. But there are four or five other guys that they've picked up from other clubs in the offseason in some of these trades that I think you could say would be in the mix to break camp in the rotation.
Ken, I think one of the things, I mean, baseball people many times are cautious. They have a good team. They're afraid to break it up. I've talked to GMs all winter. I'm not going to touch my team. I like my team. Billy Beane is totally fearless about taking it apart and putting it back together. I think he feeds off the fact that some people think, okay, Billy, you've gone too far this time. What is it in Billy's DNA, do you think, that gives him the confidence that I can just blow up a good team and put it back together, and it's all going to be okay. We're going to be in contention again.
It's almost a distant cousin to the Branch Rickey about you're better off trading a player a year too early than a year too late. In this case, sure, it applies to almost an entire team. I think you said it, Richard, when you said he's fearless. He doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care what I think. I'm not sure he cares a whole lot about what the fans think, and I don't mean that as a pejorative at all. He has a tremendous amount of confidence. And he has in his own ability and also the ability of his front office and his evaluators and in the way that they evaluate. And he has a lot of autonomy within the front office. So when he gets to that point where he feels that this is a team that is slipping and he analyzed where they were and maybe where the Angels were and some of the other clubs in the division and said, you know, it might be counterproductive to try to continue to get another year or two out of the team that he had on the field at the end of last year, especially because he was going to lose some of those guys as free agents in the offseason. He just has no hesitation about turning things around and going in a different direction. And he's done it before, and he's been successful with it. And that's why I've always said when people ask me, what do I think Billy is going to do in the offseason or at the trading deadline, I say I have no idea. Because I know one thing, he's going to surprise us.
Yeah. When we get to spring training, is there a guy or guys of these new faces that you're most anxious to see?
It's a great question. I think that, not sure about maybe the most anxious to see, I think one of the real keys to the team in the season would be Brett Laurie. I think he's got to be healthy. I think he's a really good player offensively and defensively, but staying healthy has been the real issue for him. And I think if he is healthy, he might have a big part to play in taking this team to another level. Beyond that, I really want to see some of the young pitchers. The kid Jesse Hahn they got from the Padres, who I know had Tommy John surgery but has a big-time arm. The two kids from the Blue Jays, Graveman and Nolan. So those are guys that and I think they're going to have to be factors for the club because they're going to need that kind of depth in their rotation.
Ken, how do you see the landscape of the American League West now?
Well, I like it. I'm not I'm not 100% sold on the Angels because of their rotation, Richard.
Sure.
Weaver's very good, and he's always been really good against the A's. One of the best ever against the A's in the last 8 or 10 years. Beyond that, with Garrett Richards being hurt, and who knows when he's going to come back, and when he does, if he'll be as effective as he was last year. C.J. Wilson just imploded in the playoff start that he made. I don't know if you can count on him. Shoemaker had a great rookie year. The Mariners made the biggest noise once again in the offseason. I think a lot of people are going to pick them to win at Texas. They're banking on getting healthy. The Astros just picked up Evan Gattis, so they've got a lot of right-handed power on their club. So it's a good division. It's tough, and I like it. Actually, I really feel that because you play so many games within your own division, you're playing 19 games against your division rival, that when the division is strong, I think it's great for the fans. I think it's great for us as broadcasters, too.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. And it's just going to be fascinating to see, to watch this new A's team and and to see the smile on Billy's face when they have a five-game lead at the All-Star break.
Yeah, they could. I think, well, the one thing you want as a fan is to feel like you've got a chance. And I think when they traded Donaldson, maybe that might have been, you know, a little doubtful as far as the fans were concerned. But I think now you can look at this team and say they've got a chance once again this year.
Absolutely. And it's been great fun to watch. Billy's off seasons are as much fun as this season. Anyway, I appreciate you joining us, Dan, and we'll see you in Arizona.
Our guest today is the voice of the Mariners, Dave Sims. Dave, I was looking at the Fangraphs projections. They have the Mariners projected as the best record in the American League, the second best record in all of baseball behind the Dodgers. It's a pretty good, you know, I know it means nothing here in January, but it's a pretty good reinforcement or endorsement of the work Jack Cerenjic's done over the last 2 years, isn't it?
I wholeheartedly agree. And, Richie, I'm going into my ninth year, and I saw that, and I had to, like, let me get up, sit up, stand up, and then sit down again. Let me look at that again. It's very impressive. I think Jack's done a great job. And I think if everybody can stay healthy and, you know, just have their normal year, it should be a lot of fun. I mean, I love the pitching that's coming back. You love Nelson Cruz. Ruggiano just, let's see, he and Ackley, Furbush, Jackson, and Morrison just went through, actually, they signed him. They didn't even have to go through arbitration. I just like the pieces that he's put together, and it bodes well. But, the proof is planted on the field.
Yeah, Dave, I've known Lloyd McClendon for a long time, as you have. You know, you're one guy when you're a member of Jimmy Leland's staff. When I saw him walk on the field last year for the first time as the Mariners manager, it was like, oh, my God, this guy is in charge.
Man, that's exactly right, Rich. Hey, new sheriff, baby. And he said, listen, I love you guys, but I love my family more. If you're not getting it done, I'm getting the next guy. So let's go. And, you know, there was little to I don't think there's hardly any drama. And maybe one or two things that did happen, it was nipped in the bud quickly. Cano and Felix being the alpha ducks took care of it. What ended Lloyd left open. And he said, I remember there was an incident, and they said, hey, we got this, Skip, don't worry about it. It's been a great clubhouse, and the excitement is there, especially when you look at getting Cruz this year, when last year seemed like we were with an eyelash at getting him, and it didn't work out, and he's the absolute answer to our DH needs.
Yeah, and so, back to Lloyd, it's almost like he's got a perfect resume in that he'd been a manager, he'd been a player, he'd been on a great manager's staff. And it's like all those things came together to make this guy. And, he also carries himself. There's a quiet confidence about him. And I think on a team that's trying to learn how to win and all, those are huge factors that he's been where the Mariners are trying to go.
I've had Kyle Seager, I've had Brad Miller say, hey, man, go to war for that guy.
Yeah.
And that's the ultimate endorsement. When you have a young player like that, like those two guys, and Seager's an all-star and a gold glover, and Miller's on the come, too. I think that's as great an endorsement as you could get.
Dave, as we go to spring training, what are the roster issues? Is it who's going to play shortstop? What is the things that Jack and Lloyd will be trying to decide?
Yeah, I just came back from the gym, and I knew I was coming on with you, and I was thinking about the same thing. As I go position to position, I mean, Zunino, and right now they got Jesus Sucre booked as the number two guy, but we'll see what happens. He's a good defensive catcher, not much of a hitter. First base, you got Morrison. You got Montero maybe looming on the outside. He supposedly has lost a ton of weight. We'll see what happens there. Cano at second. Shortstop, you got Miller and Taylor. Real curious to see what happens there. Miller's left-handed hitter. Taylor's right-handed hitter. Taylor might have been up in April, but he broke a hand. So this competition in spring is going to be dynamite, watching those two guys get after it. Seager at third, Ackley in left, Austin Jackson in center, and Ruggiano and Seth Smith in right field, with your backup outfielders, Stefan Romero, right-hander, James Jones, left-hander, and Andy Chavez, the venerable veteran, stole a wild card. He's bailed us out the last 2 years. He hadn't been signed yet, but if they do sign him, that wouldn't surprise me. Willie Bloomquist as your super utility infielder guy. He's coming off a knee injury, but he's bound and determined to be an impact guy in that role. And then you get your seven relievers and your five starters, so that adds up to 25. So it's if a young kid is really gonna have to come out of nowhere, DJ Peterson or somebody like that, or Gabby Guerrero, they'd have to blow everybody away in camp to make this team.
I wanted to ask you about watching Austin Jackson play center field every day and the impact his glove had on the ball club.
Yeah, gap to gap, got it covered. I mean, you got no worries at all. And that's been the best since when Franklin Gutierrez was the center fielder a few years ago, and he was playing at a gold glove caliber level. And, of course, he's had his physical ailments and medical problems over the last few years, and he's been unavailable. But AJ is the real deal. Now we got to get him back to hitting 275, 285, something like that, and then have a total package and get him stealing some bases again too.
Robinson Cano was in the Jeter shadow, the Andy Pettit Rivera shadow in New York somewhat. And so you never know what the guy is going to be like when he's asked to be the guy, not just in the lineup, but in the room. Well, what was he like? What did you learn about him last year?
Richie, he is, I live here in New York, and matter of fact, I just was on, a guy comes up to me and says, hey, what about Cano? He must really hate it out there in Seattle and everything. I mean, I said, you take him back in a heartbeat. Don't give me that crap. You take him in an absolute heartbeat. The guy's going to the Hall of Fame. He's an absolute gem. What a good guy. I'd had just minimal interaction with him during his years with the Yankees. We only see him, six times, twice over the course of a season. But getting to be around him and watch him interact and watch the guys react to him, he's everything you could want in a superstar. I mean, he and Felix Hernandez are the alpha dogs on the team. He's been very helpful. And it's, having been there, having won a World Series, having been in the drama of a pennant race, knowing, to let the game come to you. Don't let the game slow down. And think about it. Just take your time. It's going to happen. You're good enough. You're here already. So now just go out and do what you do. And he kept saying that from minute one when I saw him in spring training, and even going down to the last day when the Mariners were in it until, the middle of the fifth inning when Oakland closed out Texas to eliminate the Mariners. But you could not ask for anything more out of this guy.
Yeah, and Dave, one of the reasons you sign a guy like that is it gets people's attention in the city. Hey, look, our boys are doing something. And what have you noticed in terms of fan excitement? The Mariners were back over 2 million last year in home attendance. How excited are they to have a club that looks like we're going to be one of the best in baseball?
Well, as you probably know, I'm pretty active in social media, and I'm hearing from a lot of jacked-up Mariner fans.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, we're obviously competing with the Seahawks, who they're 60 minutes away from a back-to-back Super Bowl trip. So in terms of sports fans in Seattle and the Pacific Northwest, they are on a heck of a high. And last year, Mariners, our Root Sports broadcast, had the biggest ratings increase of anybody in baseball. We had a 300,000 jump in attendance in the ballpark. This region is ready to go absolutely bonkers over the Mariners. And we haven't been in the playoffs since 2001, so it's a hungry group of people out there that's starving for a winner in baseball. And as you know, what a difficult division this is. The AL West is tough, man.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. How do you see the landscape of the AL West?
The Angels, they won 98 games. They're still a problem. I think we've more than held our own. I think the team that gives us as much problem as maybe, if not more than anybody, is the Astros. Man, oh, man. They've made a lot of changes down there. They brought a lot of veterans in there. It's going to be a bigger veteran presence this year. I think that's going to be interesting. I look for Texas to get healthy. I don't know if all their pitchers will be healthy. And then I think, I had my questions about what Billy was doing in Oakland, and it seems like he's torn it down and in the process of building it back up. So I think it's a super competitive division, and I talk a lot with Mike Socia. We're both Philly guys, and we hang out when the two teams get together, and he's been saying for years, I'm telling you, it's the best and has been the best division baseball for a lot of years.
It's great. Dave, I appreciate the time. I hope you're enjoying your off season. It won't be long till we're in Arizona.
Countdown's on, Rich. It really is, man. I just got back from the gym. I'm fired up, and I'll go out to Seattle on Monday for Fan Fest and Caravan. So baseball fever is already heating up big time, man.
All right, good to talk to you, Dave. I'm joined now by Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros for MLB.com. He's been a busy boy this week again as the Astros continue to add to their club. At the end of the day, Brian, how much can you give us the back and forth on the risk-reward on Gattis, who's been hurt some, who strikes out some, but he does hit home runs, and the Astros gave up three prospects to get him. Can you talk about what Jeff Luhnow went through to get to the point where he wanted to do this deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think they realize, you know, they need to improve the club now, and you know, they're making the kind of deals that are not for the future anymore; they're for the here and now. And they needed to add some power somewhere, and you know, adding power doesn't come cheap. And we know Gattis has his downfalls; he strikes out a lot. He's not a great defensive player; he even admits that. But if he does find a way to get healthy and play at Minute Maid Park with that short left field, I mean, he's got a chance to be a 30 home run guy. And they need a guy; they need that bat in the lineup right now, especially in one of the corner outfield spots. And it looks like Gattis is going to play left field, I think. No one's really committing to anywhere other than he's really not going to catch very much. I know he's listed on the roster as a catcher, and he caught last year pretty much exclusively with the Braves. But I see him catching, playing left field for the most part, maybe being replaced in the eighth inning for a defender, a plus defender to go in there, and then maybe getting some time at DH. But also, you know, Chris Carter is kind of in the same boat. Another guy hits a lot of home runs, strikes out a lot, can't do much defensively. Ideally you'd want a guy who can do a little bit of everything, but you know, they're trying to piece this together. They have to add some power, and they paid a very high price for it in giving up two of their top nine prospects as well as a second-round draft pick.
The Astros were, in the last month, they had told me, hey, like, the next thing is to get a starting pitcher. Do you think they didn't expect to be able to do this deal, or it just they got to the point where they said, hey, look, we have to give up the prospects. We're going to give up the prospects. Let's go get this guy. We need this guy.
Yeah, I think they just realized. I mean, I think they've been after Gattis for a while. He's been a guy they've been targeting to fill a spot, and you know, I think it finally came to fruition. I don't know if they had to, you know, if they were balking on giving up Fulton Nevich. I mean, they've given up some pretty hard throwing guys here recently with Fulton Nevich and then Kosar last year. So, you just got to wonder down the road, you know, this will be a trade they look back on. You know, only time will tell. But they're still in the market for a starting pitcher, and I think that's going to be the final piece to their puzzle. I know that they would have liked to add somebody at first and third. Gattis can play a little bit at first, but they're going to have to, you know, roll the dice with Dominguez at third and then give Singleton another shot at first. But they do want to add another starting pitcher. Wojciechowski is going to be in the mix, but, you know, he's an unknown, and he's going to be a rookie, never pitched in the major league. Sam Dunno is going to get a shot, but he's a journeyman. Alex White, but he hasn't pitched in the majors in a long time because of an injury. Brad Peacock is injured to start the year, so they have a real hole now in their rotation that they're going to have to go out and get someone. They're not going to get one of the big-name guys, Scherzer or Shields, anybody like that, but if they can find one of the next-tier guys and get them relatively cheap, that's still on the to-do list at this point.
You know, Brian, it's impressive to see the growth of the club now, in that you look at the outfield and say, okay, that's a good outfield. Short and second, they're taken care of. Catcher's good. DH is good. And like you said, the first and third base. The trade of Real Ruiz sort of opens the door for Colin Moran. In a best-case scenario, what do you think the timetable for him is? I guess what I'm asking is, if he passes every test, how soon can he be the third baseman at Minute Maid Park?
I think maybe a year out. I think Moran, he got his feet into Double-A a little bit. If he starts the year Double-A, you know, and does well, he could be in Triple-A. He might even start in Triple-A this year. That wouldn't surprise me at all, but I think he's definitely knocking on the door. And, you know, I wrote about this at Astros.com in the last day or so, that when they traded for Moran last year, you know, the first thing you thought about was, you know,
know, well, what about Rio Ruiz? We know we're very high on this guy, but all of a sudden now he got the number six overall pick in his way. So, you know, I think, you know, looking back on it now, you can tell maybe the writing was on the wall for Ruiz and that, you know, they were going to look to package him somewhere, and they thought more highly of Moran, who they considered taking with the number one pick a couple of years ago. But to answer your question, I think he comes to camp, and, you know, I don't think he'll compete for a job just yet. I mean, you know, let's be honest, he's barely played above Class A at this point. But he goes to Triple A and does really well, and Dominguez continues to struggle. You know, being a college kid and having a year under his belt now, a couple of years under his belt in the minor leagues, I don't see any reason why you can't bring him up and roll the dice and see what you got.
And, Brian, what do you think Jeff Luhnow is thinking about the situation at first base? What do you think? Who do you think he projects in his mind is going to be their opening day?
Well, I think Singleton. I mean, if you look at their roster right now, really nobody else. I mean, we talked about Carter and Gattis being able to play first, but you know, they're more suited to play elsewhere. Singleton is the guy right now. They signed a free agent Triple A guy who can hit the ball far, but he's not going to be first baseman of the future. It's going to be up to Singleton to get it together, and he's still the guy. And you know, I think even if he struggles in the spring, he's going to start the season at first base. But if he's in mid-May, if he's really struggling like he did at the end of last year, then they have a big dilemma on their hands, because now you've got a pretty large sample size over two seasons where this guy is just not putting the bat on the ball. So you know, he's going to have every chance. He's going to have a new hitting coach to work with. He's going to have all spring training to kind of acclimate himself. He's got the contract situation out of the way. He's a further year removed from, you remember, spring training last year. He admitted he had been a drug addict. You know, that's hopefully more in his rearview mirror. So he's a little bit more mature, still a young guy. And I think they're going to give him every opportunity this year, early in the year, to you know, prove he's worth that contract. I mean, they give the guy $10 million. So I think they're going to have a long leash with him.
And, Brian, one last question about Gattis. Will he catch? Is he on the depth chart at catcher also? I see you got him listed as the backup to Castro. How much will he catch? Will he catch at all? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think he'll be a third catcher type guy. I mean, the catcher is going to be Castro and Conger. I mean, that's pretty clear at this point. Corporan is going to be, I know they're trying to trade him, and if they can't trade him, you know, I'm not sure what you do with him. They have Max Stassi as well, but I think that Gattis is going to be the third catcher. You know, a guy that maybe can catch here and there, or, you know, late in the game if you got something going on to where you need a pinch hit for a catcher and another catcher's out, you can put him back there. But the bulk of the time, it's going to be Castro and Conger behind the plate. Gattis is going to play elsewhere, but, you know, he better keep his catchers mid handy because he might have to do it every now and then.
Yeah, you know, it's 3 years since Jeff Luhnow arrived here, and, you know, it's been a tough 3 years, but now there's expectations, and you can see a ball club shaping up. It's going to be fun to watch. Brian McTaggart of MLB.com has been our guest, and I appreciate it, Brian. We'll talk to you soon. I'm joined by my friend, T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers for MLB.com. T.R., I wanted to begin with a couple of, in the roster maze, that's the Rangers going into camp this year, a lot of interesting names. I wanted to ask you about a couple of former first-round draft picks, not first-round draft picks of the Rangers. Where does Michael Choice fit in the pecking order now? A guy once considered a terrific prospect, acquired from the A's, had a very tough year at the big league level, but was good at Round Rock. What do the Rangers think his place on the team could be, or does he have one?
Well, he has one, Richard. He's one of their candidates to play left field, along with Ryan Ruau and Jake Smolinski, maybe Carl Spigaro, who they signed to a minor league contract. Now, the Rangers still like Michael Choice. Very talented player, very hardworking player. You know, he just needs to get better, that's all. He needs to go out and win a job. He's one of the candidates, and it's up to him to deliver.
Was there a particular problem last year, or irregular playing time, or did he just get into bad habits? What do you think, what was your assessment of watching him play last year? Because he did get.
Well, I think there was a lot of struggles as far as being, you know, a part-time player, not getting regular playing time. I think that was a little difficult for him, and he had a hard time adjusting to it. But he's going to have to. I mean, you know, the Rangers aren't going to give him a full-time job unless he, you know, he shows something right away. So, you know, it's kind of a catch-22. You know, he's in the mix, but he doesn't have a full-time job right now.
And, TR, how is he defensively?
you know, he's decent. He's average. I mean, he's not extraordinary, but it's not his best part of his game. I mean, this guy needs to deliver right-handed power if he's going to play in the major leagues. That's why he was the number one draft pick by the Oakland Athletics, and that's why the Rangers got him, is to figure he can be an offensive producer, a run producer.
And I also wanted to ask you about a former Astros first-round pick, Delino DeShields Jr., taken in the Rule 5 draft, left unprotected by the Astros. Where do the Rangers see him fitting in? What do you think they liked about him?
Well, they like his speed. I mean, this guy is a plus-plus speed guy, and that's what they're looking for. They need a backup center fielder behind Leonis Martin. They need they like a guy who can run, who's an athlete, who can run down fly balls. He's got a little versatility. I mean, he's got a chance to stick. A guy like that, if he can show something in spring training, definitely has a role on the team.
Are they looking at him as an outfielder? Or, I mean, he came up as an infielder. What do you think his role is? Just be ready to play wherever they ask you to play?
They need outfielders. They got plenty of infielders. They got Rougned Odor to play second base. You know, Jerks and Profar's on the comeback. And they got a couple other guys in the minor leagues who can play the infield. They need an outfielder who can run.
When you get to Surprise, Arizona, is there one guy you're most anxious to see what he's done with himself over the winter, how he plays in spring training? Is there a
I mean, the obvious question, answer to that question is Prince Fielder. I mean, everybody else pales in comparison to Fielder. I mean, you know, he had the neck surgery to fix the herniated disc. You know, his power production has been down the last couple of years. You know, the Rangers have a lot invested in him. You know, everybody else, you know, is secondary to what they want to see from Prince Fielder.
You know, when I look at the Rangers, there's so many interesting names out there. Ryan Rua, who they like, Odor. How tough is it going to be to make assessments, to get everybody enough of a look to make an assessment in spring training? It seems like they're going to have a challenging spring just to settle on 25 guys. What do you think?
Well, there'll be plenty of at-bats. I mean, you know, they've got a lot of split squad games, and, you know, they'll get guys good looks. I mean, it's up to these guys deliver. I don't think anybody will lack for playing time. You know, it's just going out there and producing.
Leonis Martin is 26 years old. He's now had over 1,000 at-bats in the big leagues. He's a guy that Ron Washington loved at times, Ron Washington frustrated at times. What's the growth you've seen in this guy?
Well, Leonis has been a good center fielder. He's got a tremendous arm. He covers ground. He's improved significantly in center field. So he can play center field, and he can bat at the bottom of a lineup. I mean, he's a number nine hitter with some speed, can hit for average. You know, the guy can play on a team. You know, the question is, will he be good enough to be a leadoff hitter? Will he be able to get on base, use his speed, you know, drive the ball, things like that? It's just a matter of, you know, how good this guy is going to be. You know, he's adequate at the bottom of a lineup. He's, you know, the question is, can he be adequate or better at the top of a lineup?
You know, TR, John Daniels had a careful offseason. I think we would agree. He hasn't done anything reckless, held on to his prospect, kept his powder dry. Is he able to just drown out the noise of fans who want to see a splash? Or how do you think he weighs all of that with balancing ownership, fans, and his own expectations of the club?
Well, he's got a budget that he has to stick to. Number two, he's got a very productive farm system that he'd like to look at. He's got a lot of confidence in his young players. I mean, it basically comes down to, and it comes down to this every year, is how much confidence you're going to have in young players. How much are you willing to commit to those guys as opposed to trying to find the quick fix on the free agent market? And that's the big thing that's facing John Daniels right now. And I think right now his confidence is high in that farm system. And he knows he's got some players coming in the next 2 or 3 years that could really have an impact on this team, and he doesn't want to block their path with some major free agent signings.
Well, Joey Gallo, the guy who's gotten so much attention for the home runs he's hit in the minor leagues, will he get playing time in spring training major league games? Will we see him for the first time?
You betcha. They haven't announced it yet, but I expect he'll be invited to spring training, and I expect he'll get a lot of playing time. You know, Adrian Beltre is their veteran third baseman, and veteran third basemen don't make all the trips, and they don't play a lot early in spring training, so I think you'll see Joey Gallo out there a lot. While, you know, Adrian always seems to come up with a leg injury early in camp just to kind of slow himself down, a veteran move like that. So you'll see Joey Gallo a lot.
Okay. All right, TR, appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the American League West.